Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Access Astrology. Three astrologers who get together on Monday evening and chat about what's going on in the sky and how that is mirrored in our lives and in the newspaper headlines around us and even in the footnotes. So here we are, Monday evening. This would be the last Monday of September 2009. And speaking to you from New York, Manhattan, on the west side, I am Mark Waltz, and I'm joined by...
Ann Ortley at my bright red desk on the Upper East Side.
And Heather Rowan Robbins speaking to you from the Canadian border in the middle of North Dakota.
Okay. So, here we are. And later in the show, you'll have an opportunity to phone in and ask us a question or make a comment on something that we've been talking about or ask for a little more information or give us your birth information and ask a question, and we'll see what we can recommend. Anyway, you can, what is that number? Who's got that number?
347-215-8881. Repeat, 347-215-8881.
Good, and then once you're connected, there's actually, you have to push number one or something. They give you instructions, but follow the instructions in order that you can get on the queue so we know you're there. And then when we call up the next person on the queue, you can actually hear us and we can hear you.
Right.
Okay, so you have to follow the instructions.
Yeah, otherwise, you can just listen to the show on that number, but if you want to talk to us for us to see you, you have to press the one.
That's it, yeah. So press the one once you've called in. Or otherwise, just listen. Good. So we have quite a full week ahead of us. The first thing on the agenda is tomorrow, Mercury goes direct. It'll be at 21 Virgo.
Woo-hoo!
And Heather always likes that. Heather is the most sensitive of the people.
Very Mercury.
To Mercury retrograde.
That outrageous. I'll give you my Mercury stories later, but you know, I think there's some really lovely ones in the headlines right now.
Yes.
But I am definitely looking forward. I figure that the woman who just found out that she was carrying somebody else's fetus after in vitro fertilization was a really tough example of the Mercury retrograde.
Right.
But who a familiar one. Surprise! Can you feel for the woman who started her first gig on Saturday Night Live under Mercury retrograde in a skit where she is supposed to pretend she's saying the F word but not say it, where there was like three biker chicks sitting around talking about friggin' this and fracking that and not say the F word, and of course she said it.
Right.
And war publicly, you know, they censored her, and now they're talking about possibly firing her because she may get, you know, she got Saturday Night Live in trouble. But that's Mercury retrograde hell.
It's like Mercury retrograde.
Yeah.
You don't do stuff like that. You don't fool around with the words.
You know it's going to slip out. Whatever you're not supposed to say always comes through first.
Right.
Right. They took the humor right out of that one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was also a play on the guy that did the thing with the duck, you know, Ernie Anastas, you know, when he was plucking the duck instead of effing the duck. So. But it was kind of like, I didn't say effing. Well, maybe I did, but I meant to say plucking, you know.
Right.
But clearly he had been going plucking, effing, effing, and then effing came out instead of plucking. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Mercury retrograde. We love that little devil Mercury. He's just causing all sorts of trouble. And also, he's going back and forth. So he last we tuned into him, he went into his shadow in April, not April, August. There we go, Mercury retrograde, on August 17th. Then he talked to Saturn, and then he talked to Pluto, and then he retrograded, and he went back and he talked to Pluto, and then he talked to Saturn. And now
Uranus.
Yeah, and don't forget Uranus too. And now he's about to go retrograde, go direct again, and he's going to talk to Saturn and talk to Uranus and talk to Pluto. So he is, like, causing trouble out there because he's running back and forth between the three of them carrying messages. And we don't know what he's saying to them, but we do know that he's kind of stirring the pot. So it's an interesting thing. You know, we had the the reveal of the nuclear thing in Iran, and then they shot some weapons off. And, you know, and I'm looking at it as a Mercury retrograde going, oh, good, you're telling them to do it in Mercury retrograde, which means maybe when it goes direct, we'll be more aggressive and be more fighty. And, of course, Israel's saying, you know, we're not going to sit around. We're going to bomb them. And I'm like, oh, man, we don't want another war. But, yeah, Mercury retrograde. You know, the whole communications about power and whatever and all the treaties that were signed. And in New York we had a whole thing with Muammar Gaddafi's tent. It kept getting, you know, they kept trying to put up his tent in different places. And then they'd make him,
tent. I thought you said pet.
His tent, yeah. He would tried to put it up in New Jersey, and they were like, no. And then he tried to put it up in Bedford, and no. And they're all like, go stay in a hotel. We don't want you putting your tent up in our backyard. So it was very Mercury.
Another Mercury retrograde story that had me quite upset this week. And this goes again with the three cycle. Now, the simple personal one is the engine of my car, very Mercury, seized. You know, Mercury is all things to do with communication and transportation and how we think and how we share. Mercury went when it first went over those planets, Mercury conjunct Saturn, my engine seized on my car. I tried to drive it with the oil light empty. That was my fault. And then
Heather,
then
no oil light driving. Okay.
Right. And I mean, I thought I could get to the nearest gas station.
Yeah,
but that's not easy to do in North Dakota.
No, North Dakota, far gas stations.
Right, exactly. So all throughout this last month, we see the car going into the shop, and then they put it outside on the lot. Then it goes back in. Then it gets back out, and it's not ready yet. So we're hoping that as Mercury turns direct and it goes back over those positions, that our car starts again.
Right. What have you been doing? Hitchhiking?
They had to replace the engine.
Oh wow! Wow.
And it's the. If we paid the car off, we probably would have sold it instead, but we haven't, so we have to do this. The process with, but in a much sadder version, you know, the wonderful Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who left Vietnam during the Vietnam War era to speak to Americans about promoting the peace movement and meeting Martin Luther King to talk about the peace movement. Only recently got back and has made him very famous about his mindfulness movement around the world and, you know, really walking his talk around peace, has only recently gotten back into Vietnam in the last 4 or 5 years to teach and has a growing contingent of followers there and is speaking very much up about peace and has recently put in a request to the Vietnamese government to soften their religious police and allow more freedom of religion. And he's not there, but his monastery was 2 nights ago surrounded by police and with an, in quotes, angry mob, but half of the angry mob was police. And then the police could pretend they were protecting him from them from the angry mob and rounded up all of his monastics. You know, they've been told for the last month, either you leave and disrobe or, you know, you're in trouble. And they were all rounded up and carted off, and we don't know where.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
2 nights ago, and it was reported live on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are emailing the Vietnamese consul and our State Department to get this out there and let it, you know, to let them know we're watching. And that you can't do that.
Right.
But it is, as it happened with Mercury retrograde, we often see that what happens on Mercury retrograde gets reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And not always, but often it is. And so it is actually hopeful to me that this happened with Mercury retrograde.
Right. Wow.
That it may be turned around quickly.
Yeah.
And so when Mercury goes direct tomorrow, everybody's like, wow, it's so wonderful that it's direct. But while it's turning direct, we often see this the turbulence as people's, you know, the idea information just comes out.
Right.
I have one client whose sister, who's a doctor, had a nervous breakdown in August,
mm-hmm.
and she seems to be improving now. I was suspicious that it will come that the frayedness of her nerves will continue to show until Mercury gets past its opposition to Uranus next week. So it's like we've, I think of the Irish phrase, talk it over drunk, then talk it over sober, is that we talk it over with Mercury retrograde, then talk it over with Mercury direct. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that we've decided is a very good processing with Mercury retrograde, but we need to look at all those decisions again with fresh eyes next week and the week after that.
Right.
I think.
Totally agree. Mark, what do you see?
It's fun to look at the full moon coming up. It's got an enormous number of aspects among the other planets. It's Venus, Mercury, and Mars. They all have something to say during that full moon. And, And Mercury is a big part of that picture. So I think Mercury also has been just sort of biding its time, waiting to turn direct again and knowing there would be a lot to say. So I think we'll find communications really quite busy in this week. A lot of stuff that has to get straightened out and back on track. Things that have been sort of on hold, waiting to hear, waiting even more to hear, and suddenly we hear, and so we get to respond. And so I think it's going to be a week full of that kind of stuff. And then with Venus and Mars active in that picture too, we just have a lot to keep us busy. So I think it's shaping up to be really a very busy week. And that full moon will be in Aries. The moon will be over in Aries opposite to the sun in Libra. And
it's usually a wild night, no matter what.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always action, So.
Mm-hmm. Aries has his action with a lazy streak. I mean, it's lazy where we're not inspired because we're dragging our feet, and active and out there wherever we're inspired.
Yeah. Well, Aries wants what it wants when it wants it. I've been, I have that new
and
Aries.
And doesn't want what it doesn't want when it doesn't want it.
Yeah, I know. He's very fussy. He's like, man, I want that. Oh, I want that. That works. I want that. Yeah, thank you very much. But I don't want that other thing. No.
No,
it's totally.
And please don't tell me what to do.
No. Don't tell me at all. I'm not happy with that at all. So, it's definitely one of those. I always like the Aries moon. And this one actually is interesting because it is. The Jupiter's also squaring the nodes, or not the nodes, the Mars, and it's also squaring the eclipse point. It's on the eclipse point from the July eclipse. So I think it's going to bring up stories from that July time frame when we were working with the eclipse energy. So that always makes for an interesting, thing. And the images are miners emerging from a mine and a flock of wild geese, So the whole thing with that flock of wild geese, they always rotate who's in charge. So don't feel like you have to be in charge on this one.
Aries are happy to let you do it once in a while, as long as they get their turn.
As long as they get their turn, right. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely one of those kind of interesting full moons. And it is really, really active. Virtually everything's talking to everything else.
Everything's active talk. And we have the grand trine between, you have a trine between Mars and Uranus, exact. So it's a highly energized trine.
Right.
And the north node is trining Saturn, and Saturn and Mercury sextile Mars, and Uranus sextiles north node. So there's kind of an interesting synastry between all of that. One of the pieces that I see about that full moon was because it is so energized. One of the gifts of every full moon is it helps us see our paradoxes. And with the sun in Libra, it's all about the other person and our diplomacy and what we share. And we see this at in the UN, everybody's talking about, no, you first. But the Aries moon talks about what's the real motivation underneath. We get to know what we really want and what we really don't want. We get that inner truth about where our energy is going in our life. Because if we can line up our action and be diplomatic about what we really want, then magic happens. But, it's like the Aries speaks of that inner current underneath. If if we really want something and are not acting in line with what our soul is being called to do, then we have no energy for our life. But when what we're doing is in line with our soul purpose, then we have so much more access to the energy. And sometimes that's one of the hardest things to do, because we see, you know, we know what everybody else wants, but it's hard to really be in touch with that deeper feelings. So this week we may get a big time kick of, well, I know I don't want that, but what do I want?
Right.
You know, and or, you know, something that holds us still, I'm thinking of you, Anne, holds us still and allows us to say, forget what my obligations are.
Mm-hmm.
What do I want?
Right. What's my vision? Yeah.
Right.
Literally, what's my vision? Well, and the other thing I noticed is
there's
a wicked finger of God in the you know, forming over this week, actually. The first time Mercury and Mars are traveling in a sextile to each other, and they're first up, they're in conjunct to Chiron, and then they move on the full moon, they're in conjunct to Neptune. So they're really talking, you know, when that happens, Chiron-Neptune is usually a fib or a lie or a deception that's based in a reason, you know, based in the wound. We lie because we don't want someone to know about something, or we hide it because we don't really want to deal with it because we're feeling wounded by it. But it also has an energy of not necessarily being truthful, because the inconjunct is receiving it. But the moon and the moon and Mars are in mutual reception, so moon in Aries is going to tell. It's going to go, no, I'm going to tell. And they're going to go, no, don't tell. Moon Aries, I'm going to tell. Why wouldn't I tell?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lie you can figure out, or a lie you can find, you can feel the energy of. And that Mercury-Mars sextile to the Neptune and the Chiron is really an interesting finger of God, because it lays angular in the chart cast for Washington. So it also indicates some kind of deception in that capacity too. And we also have, you know, in the chart cast for Washington, it's Saturn's day, Mercury's hour, and Saturn and Mercury are joined to each other. So it's very much about be careful, because it's one of those moons that is very much about truth telling and truth coming to light, or as you said before, your understanding of what you really want coming to light. And that Mercury Uranus opposition is really big, because it pops and it says, okay, see this clearly, see it. Do you see it? And, you know, and the answer should be, well, yeah, I don't know that I want to see it, but yeah, I do see it. You know, and look, make sure to look, because the information's coming in for you to get information. It's very much an information moon, because it's got a lot of stuff in 3 and 9, and then it's got stuff in the 12th house of communication, you know, so it's telling you stuff, but it's not really telling you stuff, you know, so... it's going to be interesting.
It will be.
Yeah.
Do we have anybody on the line, do you know?
Let me look at the switchboard. I have to open my eyes to do it. Nope, nobody on the line. So we're going to call in number is 347-215-8881 if you'd like to call in with a question for Heather, Mark, or I. We're three astrologers talking about the heavens and what's going on in them and what we can anticipate. So... next up.
So I'm going to talk a little bit more about just the aspects of the next couple of days, and then Mark, maybe you could talk about the lunation of that full moon and what's really going on with it. What do you see there? What I see right now, the moon is in Aquarius today, and, you know, at least there's been a camaraderie in the air. I noticed this morning that there were a lot of mistakes, fuzziness, people forgot things, left things behind. When I was returning, run over with the computer with all of Jamie's notes to the college, on the way back, I found two other people running home for their notes or their papers, or returning back to where I had been because they forgot their notebook at the restaurant. It was very funny. So it was just a little slow off the mark this morning. Tomorrow, and that's one of the aspects of Mercury stationary, if we try to hurry, it backfires. So right now, because Mercury is stationary, it turns direct tomorrow morning at roughly 9:14 or 9:17 daylight time. But you will by the turning point, it's already stationary, and it will take a few days before we really feel its movement. You can feel the relief soon after it leaves being retrograde. But while Mercury is holding still, you know, Mercury was holding still the day that George Bush first was elected, or in quotes elected. And there was, you know, we looked at that aspect and said, no one's going to know by the time the polls close who won the election. You know, 10 years later, we still don't know who actually had the votes that day. Everything is held still, and the more we can just hold still voluntarily, sometimes the less the universe has to hogtie us. Sometimes we just need to be hogtied anyway, and just take a deep breath and hold still and work with this energy right now. But by tomorrow night, the moon conjuncts Jupiter begins to pick up the mood and free up something in us, which is lovely. The moon heads into Pisces on Wednesday night, and there's a series of aspects. I think Wednesday's going to all be about trying to straighten out misunderstandings and begin to correct the problems that have been cooking before and getting everything lined up and reorganized. Then we have some emotional reaction. I mean, the Mercury is sextile Mars, but the Sun will be the square Neptune on October 1st. Everybody's going to need to just take, emotional catch-up time. That and the next day, as that Pisces moon conjuncts Uranus and opposes Saturn, we really feel what our issues are. We feel our impatience with getting on with the places in our life. We still need to just take a deep breath and let the emotions process. On October 3rd, it's the energy shifts. You know, just kind of do your background work, because when that moon heads into Aries and then heads into the full moon, it's one, you know, piece after the other. It's going to be an exciting and intense weekend. It can be a little volatile, so kind of hold on, but be ready to roll with it. And if you've got plans this weekend, get them lined up and ready to go. Just make sure that you watch your fingers in the process if you're hammering in something, because that Aries moon can be a little less, more energetic than careful, and needs to be focused. It's a time when people can really say outrageous things, so I'm a little worried about the international politics over the weekend. I expect the rhetoric to be flying off the charts while Mercury opposes Uranus, and then hopefully head into next week with a little more sanity. Mark, do you have more about that full moon? I have a look at the chart of the moon itself.
Okay, yeah. It's the moon in Aries is definitely interested in action, and it's very impulsive and all that. But luckily, when there's a full moon in Aries, mm-hmm. the sun is in Libra. So if we can use the Libra side of that mm-hmm. polarity between sun and moon, that mm-hmm. can help to balance. But mm-hmm. you know, it's not easy to do, but at least it's there, and mm-hmm. it's the sun that, you know, gives the light to the moon. So the moon does have to sort of check in with the sun, and mm-hmm. in order to have something to reflect. Mm-hmm. So it will be a full moon. It will be in Aries, but there is always that sun back there in Libra, and that's what we need to do with whatever comes our way. On the 4th of October, really, we'll feel it coming in on the 3rd, and then it'll be very heavy, you know, all day on the 4th. The full moon actually occurs at 2:10 in the morning on the 4th, which is Sunday, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so if you want to stay up for it, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Or you can let it, you know, do its mischief for a while before you get up in the morning. But either way, it's a good energy to think about actions you need to take and be a little bit impulsive. Maybe don't act on the impulse as much as recognize it. So take it as like a symptom. So you feel, you know, something comes to you, oh, I really have to do this. And you're ready to do it. You're feeling very headstrong about it. But put it on a little time delay. Check back in with that Libra sun. And say, well, you know, how is this going to affect the people around me? I'm not acting alone here, even though I feel very big and very full of myself, you know, with that full moon. We're gonna feel just like that moon, each of us. But check back and say, where is the source of my energy? What is this light that I'm reflecting? And realize that the light I'm reflecting does come from some sense of partnership. And, you know, if we honor that, it'll help us to let our impulse be part of an equation rather than, you know, just going ahead because, you know, I had the impulse, I'll do it, right? But if you track that moon, from the moment it enters Aries, the first thing it does is square Pluto. And so it lights up that square that is forming between Saturn and Pluto that's coming up. So we start to feel that. Saturn's not out of Virgo yet, but it's getting very close. And as soon as it gets out of Virgo, it's on its way to the square to Pluto. Well, the moon sort of anticipates that with this full Aries moon, all that energy, let's take action kind of stuff. And the first thing it does is square Pluto. And I think that's where there is a little apprehension over politics and the way power is used and what we're going to do about that and what we're going to see. And that's the only aspect in Aries before we get the full moon. Everything else is waiting on that. So I think that sense of moon square Pluto is going to be really quite heavy. There'll be a sense of something impending. And then we get the full moon, but the moon is still in Aries. It happens at 11 degrees. And so the moon has quite a ways to go through Aries. And while it does, a whole bunch of other planets, really Mercury, Venus, and Mars, have their say. So right after the full moon, Mercury sextiles Mars, and that lights up that finger of God that Anne was talking about, and makes that really important. Then right after that, Venus is in conjunct to Jupiter, and then we hear from the moon again, the moon sextiles Jupiter. So Venus and moon are working, both of them, something about Jupiter. And, you know, that brings in that all that energy in Aquarius right away. So we're going to see stuff that has to do with relationship and how we're dealing with that. It's likely to bring up communications in our relationships, the one-to-one stuff. And then Venus and Moon have both done something with Jupiter, and then they talk to each other because the Moon goes in conjunct to Venus. So there's a whole little dance going on there with Venus, Moon, and Jupiter. Then we shift back to Mercury. Like, this is like watching TV and changing channels, right? So we change to the Mercury channel and watch it in conjunct Neptune and then oppose Uranus. And, you know, that plays into the finger of God very heavily again. Mm-hmm. And also lights up the Saturn-Uranus opposition. So a lot of these outer planet formations that we've been working through for months now are getting lit up on this full moon. And then we switch channels, right, and hit the little button on the clicker, and Mars gets into the action. Mars is in conjunct Neptune and trine Uranus. And again, that's that finger of God. So it's a very tight finger of God with both Mercury and Mars that are sextile. Touching exactly the points that are important in that finger of God. So very, very much we're having to deal with that. And then we're starting to move through this, you know. But Uranus goes semi-sextile to Neptune, and that's a heavy thing between those two planets. They've been doing that between Pisces and Aquarius for a while now, but we get another touch of that. And then the moon finishes off all the stories because it goes semi-sextile Neptune, Uranus, then sextile Neptune, then it squares Mars, which is the last major aspect moving through Aries, and the last little aspect is it in conjuncts Mercury. So once again, Mars and Mercury. And it's interesting that that first aspect of the moon square Pluto, which raises a lot of issues of power and how we use it, after we go through all this other stuff, through all this channel surfing, we have a last aspect of moon square Mars. And that can raise, especially with the moon in Aries, and moon and Mars being in mutual reception, because Mars is in Cancer, that can raise a sense of belligerence and me first, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do kind of energy. So we do need to watch out for that. And we may have to, you know, put a huge post-it on the fridge to say, you may feel me first is the agenda, but whatever me first wants to do has an effect on others, and it's really important to take a look at what that's going to be. So I think we'll need to remind ourselves. We have to be very conscious of that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yep, it does. Mm-hmm. Beautifully.
Well, and I think that, you know, the finger of God always brings in a moment of fate, you know, where you look at your fate and you go, oh, wow.
Do you think you could just
run
by what a finger of God is for our audience?
What a finger of God is, it's three planets that are not happy with each other, essentially. And what it mainly means is two planets are content. They're in the sextile aspect and they're talking to each other, either in water and earth or fire and air. So they understand each other's energies, even if they're not able to. They have to work together, but they're partnering. And then the two of them argue with a third point that's across the sky. And so what they do is they form an adjusting aspect. So I always think of fingers of God of being kind of like the tables in the restaurant when the leg is not quite right. You know, and you move the table and all the water wiggles, and you move the table, and eventually you want to get that and put like a sugar bag under. And it's a temporary hold until you get up and the next person comes and then the table wiggles again. It's a kind of a volatile aspect that asks us to live in the moment. And the three planets involved are arguing with each other. They're in different signs. They're in water, earth, and air or fire. And they're in three different modes, cardinal, fixed, and mutable. And so the combination of different elements in different modes makes them think differently. They don't think alike. One wants to take action, one wants to be fixed, and one can't make up its mind. One's in water flowing, one's in fire firing, or, you know, shooting off, and one's in air thinking, and or one's in earth being solid. So they don't. They're all different elements. They're all different modes, and they don't necessarily know how to work together. So what you have to do is say to them, okay. Like when you're moving a heavy desk and you go, okay, one, two, three, everybody lift. You have to kind of get them to live together in the moment and act in the moment, because that's the best way to get them to cooperate, because they can't plan because they don't agree with each other about anything. So it's a live in the moment aspect. So, and it is a moment by moment thing. A lot of times when you have a transiting finger of God in the sky, there's also a moment of choice that comes, and people think of it as a fated, F-A-T-E-D moment, where there's a fate presented to you, kind of a road less traveled. Which road are you going to take? You're at a crossroads, and pick what you want to do. So when it's a transit, it can be a very fated moment in time. When it's just in the sky, it feels like, you know, you have different energies pulling at you in different ways, and you don't necessarily know which way to go. And so the best thing to do is say, in this moment, what do I really want to do? Well, I want a ham and cheese sandwich. Okay, we'll eat lunch. And while you're sitting eating lunch, think about what you're going to do next. You know, it's very much living in the moment, in the second. When they get activated in the sky, anybody who has one in their chart, who lives with this kind of state of constant arguing with their planets, their charts have an opportunity to make a choice or to have something profound happen. It also can have a health component to it, because it's an Aries-Virgo-Scorpio configuration. The apex is considered to be Aries. Virgo is considered one planet, and Scorpio is the other. So often there's a psychological or a physical adjustment that's needed to be able to move forward and to do whatever you want. Again, the why we live in the moment, why we live in the moment energy with this as a configuration. They're hard, but they're interesting. You know, they offer, I mean, hard is maybe a relative term. They're the kind of aspect that if you have one in your chart, I'll say to the person when they come for a reading, well, you know, you like to make plans, but they never really happen the way you think they're going to. And they're like, yes. And it's where the phrase, make plans and tell God and watch him laugh, because the finger of God says, no, we want you over here. We know you want to be over there, but we want you over here on the left. And the chart kind of almost takes over sometimes. My other analogy with it, it's like the car, you know, in Knight Riders, it used to, you know, he'd get in the car and the car'd go, we're not going there, I'm taking you where we're going, you know, and the chart just kind of takes you off to where it thinks you should be. It also has a sense of when those things are active, that there is a moment of choice in the world. And so the fact that it's happening right after this Mercury retrograde, which was a really big one, and that it involves the Gang of Three, it's really speaking to the bigger issue of what your dream is and the choice you want to make for the years ahead. So it's also, you know, because we're all at this kind of new starting point with Pluto and Capricorn, you know, for sure, for true, going direct after all the eclipses that took everybody out, you know. So we're in this new starting place where we're like, okay, time to go forward. You know, it's time for the next big chapter of your life, and here you are at a crossroads. What do you want that chapter to look like? You know, it's a major aspect, but it's kind of fun.
I'm looking at the theory of service signs that in conjunct create a sense of duty of service, and that usually it's, for instance, in this case, Mercury is in the sign that is served by, Mercury is in Virgo, and Virgo is served by Aquarius, and Cancer serves Aquarius, and Mars is in Cancer. So it looks to, when I look at that pattern, I see that the action is serving spirit, and it can be, you know, it's also it's serving, challenging, and sometimes it's interesting that challenging and service can look the same. But usually if someone is our service sign, we tend to do for them what we wouldn't do for anybody else on Earth. We just find ourselves doing things for them. Virgos serve Aries and are served by Aquarius, for example. So that in this case, that the Mars, the action, our physicality serves our hear that New York sound effect.
Yeah.
Serves that.
That's my window, thank you. Not Mark's. My window's ringing.
Oh, that's true. And then the vision and the dream serves our mind and our thinking and our reason. So we can remember to take that vision that we have, that Mercury Neptune Chiron conjunction. Take that vision, our dreams, our imagination, and let it serve our brain. Let our brain realize that, you know, that our mind has to work with our dreams. Our rationality can't just fight it all the time, but not go either I'm logical or I'm inspired, but how can I take my inspiration and find a logical way to make it happen? Mm-hmm. And Mars, you know, I can't just be willful. My willpower and my action has to serve my dream and my vision and my belief system. And so it seems like they work. It's going to be an interesting way they all work together. I think we may see some real shift around that Mercury-Neptune-Chiron, the Gang of Three, as you said, which people are really noticing Neptune in the sky right now. It's so visible at night. And they go, what was that? It's not just that Jupiter is huge right now, but that we can't see Neptune and Chiron behind it, but we can feel them when we look at it, that they're all right there together.
Right, because Jupiter's so luminous.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, where are you getting all that extra energy from, big guy? Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, I got Chiron and Neptune here helping me, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
Yep, they're shining through me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, that they speak so much of the whole issue of healthcare right now. How can we have a vision about a more generous approach to healthcare that serves all of us in the process? And
serves as
right.
a community
and,
instead of serving us as, you know,
right.
as a, you know,
it's
you're stuck. The community. It's a community process. It's not necessarily a, you know, that you did something wrong or you did something right. I know when I was facing, you know, with my eye, I was, you know, the guy's like, you might be in the hospital tonight. I'm like, shit, my healthcare sucks. You know, I wasn't having any health transits. Well, I was, but I wasn't having body transits.
Mm-hmm.
I was apparently having eye transits. I thought it would be just getting smarter instead of my eye ripping. Okay, so now we have an eye rip, and then, you know, it's like, okay, your surgery is going to cost this much. And I'm like, no. That's not an option. We really don't want that. So it's understanding that, you know, there's this whole I think it's a Protestant work ethic, actually, you know, that you, if you don't have a job, you shouldn't have health insurance. Well, I work really hard, but health insurance is more than my rent, for God's sakes, you know. It's amazing that we have this kind of punitive nature rather than saying it's a right. We should have health insurance like we have roads, like we have school, like we have things that we consider to be part of the commons. At least make it affordable, you know, make it available and take the profit out of it. So it's a little scary, actually. I was like, you know, I thought, well, I guess I'm going to write a couple more emails about my health care, my views on health care to my representatives.
You do that.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
But, yeah, it's kind of, you know, you look at that and you say, well, you know, healthcare being tied to your job, well, as we get less and less employed or we have more and more part-time people or we have less and less work in America, less and less people are going to have health insurance. It's
right.
It shouldn't be tied to work. It should be tied to being a citizen. You know, it should be part of your rights, like, you know, breathing or clean water. So,
mm-hmm.
But that's my little healthcare diatribe. We haven't had any callers. Nobody loves us tonight. 347-215-8881.
None of their phones are working, honey.
That could be too. Yeah, we're assuming the switchboard's working, but we don't know that.
Right. And we don't know that, and we don't know if their phones are working.
Yeah. So this is three astrologers, Heather Roan Robbins, Mark Waltz, and Ann Ortley, waiting for your calls. I feel like Jerry Lewis. Call in now. Call in, folks.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to pledge any money, really. You just have to ask us a question. No pledges, just questions. Yeah, so forward. So how do you see fingers of God? That's how my way, you know, it's kind of like one of those weird aspects that we don't really talk about. We say finger of God, but we don't talk about how it functions. How do you guys see it functioning in charts?
Usually, it feels like it's an What do you see, Mark?
I always remember the story of Jonah in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a real story of finger of God, because Jonah was given an assignment. And he didn't want to do it, right? So he said, I'll just get on this boat and skip out of town. And then God said, you know, you can't run from me and this assignment that I gave. And so I'm, you know, going to make stormy seas and so on. And so Jonah told everybody on the boat, you know, that the sea is so stormy because I'm running away from an assignment. And, you know, if you throw me overboard... the sea will calm down and you all can go on your way. And so he ends up in the water, and God sends a whale to swallow him, bring him back to the shore, spit him up on the shore, and, you know, he has to shake himself off like a wet dog and say, all right, I'm beat. I got to do it, whatever that assignment was. And that's often how a finger of God feels. You know, you know... You have this sense of duty. There is something that you need to do, but you don't have the full instructions. It's not clear. And you also don't really want to do it. You just feel like it's something that's been foisted off on you. That's that sense of fate. You know, oh, that's the number I drew. I wish I had drawn a different number, but this is the number I got. And it means I have to do this. And it's not what I want to do. Right? And so I think that story really shows it. And eventually you figure out, well, one way or another, I have to figure out how I can do this in a way that it might not make me entirely happy, but at least I can get it done. And I will have fulfilled some kind of an obligation that was delivered by fate or by God or something. If it's the finger of God, it must be by God, right?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you see it, Heather?
I mean, it feels like it is. It's one of those nagging issues that we have. If we have in a personal chart, it's a nagging issue that is always calling us to deal with it. We can never forget that issue. It's come up in our life, and it looks on a chart. It looks like you know, a sundial. You know, which way is it pointing? And that whatever the issue is, it's taken by the focus planet. Is it won't let us go. It's kind of got, and there's an expression in Zen Buddhism about, you know, taking your natural question and swallowing it until it's like a hot iron ball and you can't let go of it and really consumes your attention. So you really focus because it's your issue, you know, whether it's like, what the heck am I doing here? Or, you know, there's all kinds of fancy koans that they use, but all basically they come down to something that you can't answer with your logical mind, those questions. And that's what, if people are born with one, it's, you know, it's not one that shows major events in their life, but it's the repeating pattern over and over again that they're here to resolve, they're here to direct, and often it's here to inspire what they came here to do. So whenever we see one of those in our life, and you know, in the sky, it seems, again, we could come back to how do we use that focus planet in a good way. And, you know, this is how we use our mind and our action towards our vision, our dream, our spiritual beliefs in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not be the other way around. You know, in this case, it can be how do we not get bamboozled by lies, deceit, and oil, and avoid dealing with, you know, action and intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's always the other side, is it can backwash.
Right.
So I think I'm having hope.
Okay. And we have a caller on the switchboard, so I'll pull him
up. Oh, great. Yes, please.
Hello, caller. You're on the line. Hel- are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hey, I'm here, and I'm breathing, and life is good.
That's always
a
good sign.
I was sorry to hear about your eye, Anne.
I know, no, I
goodness.
Know. I know, it's like, you know, coughing in the shower, you know, and your eye can rip open. It makes you aware of your vulnerability, you know.
Absolutely. Don't take things for granted, you know.
No, I don't. I'm very grateful for my vision, and I keep saying, thank you, vision, thank you, heal. So that
heal
it clears
quickly,
out.
Yeah,
heal quickly so I can open my eyes and read again. So, yeah, so we have a question. Can we help you
with? Well, I'll tell you, I'm not really sure exactly what to ask, but
mm-hmm.
with all of this planetary activity going on, I think it's probably been more exciting than usual. So I just sort of wondered if you could tell me a little bit about some of the upcoming.
Hey, when were you born?
I was born March 24th. 1965.
March 24th, 1965.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. In Urbana, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
At 12:05 p.m.
A noon baby.
Yep, a noon baby.
Usually noon babies don't have a quiet life because their sun, that means the sun's up at the top of the chart and they're out there to do things.
Well, I sort of like that description of the finger of God. One could say one's been feeling some finger pointed at him for some time.
Well,
or been getting,
you've
getting
got
the
a
finger.
Highly motivated chart with a lot of deep feelings. And, you know, when I see the contradictions in your chart, March 24th, 1965, 12:05 p.m. in Urbana, Illinois. You're
yep.
born with your sun in Aries, your moon in Capricorn, and a Cancer rising. And those are three cardinal signs. You've got your Mars in Pisces and a lineup in Virgo, that mid-60s lineup in Virgo. So you have that deep emotional feeling, that old soul quality of the last degree of Pisces, Venus. You know, you've got a very complex heart. And you feel everything. You're like, you know, princess of the pea feelings. But your sun in Aries and moon in Capricorn want you to kind of pick yourself up by the bootstraps and keep going, and has a lot of work for you this lifetime. So there's this kind of, I see this contradiction that sits in back and forth in your chart between needing safety and privacy and security and not wanting to take risks, and the other side of you that wants to just get out there and get going and, you know, walk straight into the lion's den. And yet you can, yeah. And that's really been set off this last year and next year because Pluto is sitting on your moon and squaring your sun. So it's been a pretty complicated time for you all around.
Yep. Yep.
Anne, what do you see?
Well, I'm not supposed to look.
Oh, okay.
I got my eyes. But
I will
pipe up because you did a good, nice job describing it. So Pluto on
mm-hmm.
the moon is also the triangle energy, so it's all watching the triangles and understanding the power needs.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the moon placed in the chart?
It's in her sixth
house.
So it's
a lot of triangle energy around work and around the coworkers and around your workplace and around your job. So there's a triangle energy there asking you to own your power, finishing up a 248-year cycle. And then as it comes to square the sun, sun's in the 9th or the 10th?
Her sun is 2 degrees off in midheaven in the 9th.
In the 9th, okay. So as it comes to square her sun, it's about saying to you, okay, psychologically integrate what your beliefs are, you know, because sun in Aries is a very, it usually has really clear beliefs about things, and it's very straightforward. And if you're a 60s baby, your Mars is in Virgo, so you've got like, if she's got that Virgo clump, when Mars was in Virgo in that, with that Saturn and with Uranus and Pluto, it's a very black and white belief system. So one of the things that the universe is saying to you is understand what your belief system is and how it shapes your vision. And when you understand what your belief system is, then you can help, you're going to be able to deal with those triangles at work or the power plays going on at work. And it's also with Pluto squaring your sun in a closing square, it's asking you to own your power. There's a real call for you now to own stuff. So is she Cancer rising?
Yep.
Yes, she is.
All right, so that's even more. You know, it's really saying normally where you would hide your power with that moon in the 6th and you would just deliver the goods and do the work, the universe is really now pushing for you to step out in the world and kind of say, okay, here I am, here I am. And that Pluto trine is all the Pluto aspect to the sun moon. It's also understanding that the dynamic between mom and dad maybe didn't model the best use of power for women. And so that you have to kind of figure work with that on a different level, you know, kind of say, okay, my belief system's about women's roles and power is this. And now that I'm older, now my belief is this, because the universe is going to come to you and say, here's some power. And you're going to go, oh, okay, power. Wow. Me? It's like, yep, right. Time to step into your role and understanding the good uses of power and the bad uses of power. And there's a reluctance sometimes with a chart, with a square like that, to own it, because it's almost like a, you know, the image I keep getting is like Excalibur, like you walked into town and they said, oh, there's a sword over there. Go see if you can pull it out of the rock. And you went over and pulled it out and you're kind of looking and going, yeah, I did. And they're all looking at you going, wow. And you're kind of like, yeah, so like what? And they're like, wow. And you're like, what? What's the story? And it's about understanding that part of this journey as Pluto comes to square that sun is to integrate your beliefs about what's right and wrong and your beliefs about how the world should work. Because Cancer rising is your traditional belief system in a world that's changing. And so what your belief system is from when you were little versus what you believe to be true now and where there's a difference. And that point of where there's a difference is the place the universe wants you to adjust. Because if you adjust that point of, you know, well, my parents told me this, my church told me this, because Sun in Aries has a little bit of a dogmatic religion when it's in the 9th house. And I was told a woman's role was this, moon in the 6th, and I'm a Cancer rising, so I'm a little conservative, and I'm really sensitive to what everybody's expectations of me are, and now I'm being asked to revise that. What's my vision of what works for me? And how do I move towards that? And then the rest of them, I'll learn how to deal with them as they all adjust to my changes. But it's a very powerful time for you with Pluto squaring your sun. Major psychological integration. Very cool.
Most definitely, yes.
Yeah.
Quite a time period. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Mark's up. Yep, Mark?
Yeah, you'll be feeling very strongly this Saturn-Uranus opposition, which we've been talking about quite a bit. It's happening in the sky now with Saturn opposite to Uranus. Uranus is in late Pisces and Saturn in late Virgo. And they've been in opposition since last November, and they'll be there until next July. And so everybody's feeling this, and it's actually the reverse of what's in your chart, because you have the Saturn-Uranus opposition, but in the opposite signs from where they are now. So you're feeling that very strongly, and it's a big signature in your chart because Uranus is very tightly grouped with Mars and Pluto. And there's a whole bunch of you, a whole little sort of sub-generation that have that energy. And it's a very, we could say a reactive energy, because Saturn is trying to impose order and discipline and all the established ways of doing things, and you have the Uranus opposite it, and Uranus has a lot more help than Saturn does in your chart, because it's got Mars and Pluto with it. And Mars and Pluto, anytime they're linked up, it gives it an enormous power and an ability to sustain any effort that you start. Mm-hmm. But then they're working with Uranus. And Uranus is disruptive, and Uranus has to do things its own way, an original way, some way that can't even be described. You just figure it out as you go. And those are all opposing the sense of order and discipline. So probably you make a lot of decisions in your life by reacting. In other words, you see what's offered, and you say, well, none of that's any good. I've got a whole new idea. And, you know, you're ready to overturn and change whatever has been offered. And now, in the sky, during this, like, a year and a half here that we're dealing with this again, but in the opposite ways for you, you're one of the people that is the most lit up by this whole Saturn-Uranus struggle. So once again, you're facing that struggle, only now it's even, you know, even bigger. It seems like it's the whole world around you is going through this, and they are. But the whole question of, you know, keeping things the way they are or having a rebellion. And so you're driven by that, and then you're feeling Pluto getting ready to square your sun, you know, which it touched earlier, and it backed off, and now it's going to do again.
Well,
so
you know, I think...
How you use power. Uh-huh.
Do you have any particular questions for us?
Yes. I started back to school, kind of a change of careers, and I've just started into nursing school.
Wonderful.
And
good.
So I'm really, I think, wanting to go from the Bachelor of Science of Nursing kind of into a program where you go to the PhD, because I'm interested in teaching and research.
You've got a very curious mind.
Yeah,
I think that's wonderful.
So yeah, I guess that was going to be one question about, you know, how that looked, and then also there's just huge stuff going on in relationship as well. Huge shifts. I've been married for going on 6 years and have a spouse that's been in some ill health, but there's some huge transformation stuff going there. I guess one of my questions is, I'm curious about the Neptune, Chiron,
what
Jupiter
kind of field
thing.
What field did you leave?
Oh, I have a master's in library science, library and information management.
Okay.
I did research and consulting.
You're a great manager, and you're great with details, but you're much more of a people. I mean, you manage more than you research. So I think the research is, you've got that kind of deep, penetrating mind. But you will especially love that in about a year and a half when your progress moon goes into Virgo. But you know how to make the trains run on time. And you could run the hospital. And notice that your ability to manage needs a place to go. And that way you don't manage the people that you love. Otherwise, you have such great ideas for everybody else that it can be a problem. And you've got this kind of, this three-way conjunction you asked about. Oh, we're going to have to get off soon. Is in your house of partnership. So, yes, you are experiencing so much about what we were talking about, the healthcare reform, through your mate and through the process of healing together.
And the health issues with him should clarify pretty soon. You know, they are kind of shifting. So that'll be good once Saturn gets into Aries. Are into Libra, it'll be a little clearer about what's going on health wise.
Yeah,
which will be good.
It's becoming much clearer. I figure if I could survive Pluto on my moon, my mother was diagnosed suddenly with cancer last summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to quit school She is. She's basically cancer free. Ended up taking her to Mayo Clinic.
Oh, good.
It goes right back on your moon now, and all the issues about what do you do in the face of life and death? Because Pluto doesn't necessarily want you to die. It just wants you to look at life and death.
Right.
And, you know, Pluto on your moon, I think all that was part of your inspiration to move into nursing is to realizing how much more fascinated you were by the issues around healing than you were just about studying.
Yep.
So we're going to have to go. Mark, you want to start us out?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for calling in.
Good luck.
And feel free to call in next week, Access Astrology. Mark Wohl, Ann Ortley, Heather Lynn Robbins. Signing off.
See you next week.
See you next week, gang. Bye. Have a good week. Watch out for that finger of God. So long.
Enjoy Mercury Direct.